Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're in and around Florida, have people there, move there, got out of there. We're going to have the latest on the hurricane, of course. Senator Rick Scott, very successful two-term governor of Florida, who's had multiple hurricanes, will tell us what the situation is on the ground. I believe he's in Naples, or was this morning when we talked to him on Fox and Friends. Then we talked politics with Rich Lowry of National Review. There's some polls out there that Mark Halperin got some internals on the Democratic side. And just like maybe you speculated, but I certainly did on this show, Democrat, yeah, she is sucking wind. And she was on a roll after the DNC. We know all about that. The breath of fresh air, the sense of joy. Not so much now. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Ceasefires are not always the answer. A ceasefire may ultimately be the answer in Gaza because the Israelis at some point are going to want to go to something that looks more like counterterrorism operations in and out of Gaza.
Right. That is Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on the same page. 50 days of not talking. Seems that Israel's success has the Bidens and Bibi showing a willingness to cooperate after a 30-minute meeting yesterday and the inevitable strike against Iran. Well, it was openly discussed.
Number two.
What's happening now with Kamala Harris is this is an experiment. Can you win a short campaign with an untested candidate? And what I'm telling you is happening in private polling is she's got a problem now. It's not cheering for Trump. It's not predicting Trump will win. She's got a problem.
I am. 2024. Here we go. New polls perhaps explain why the Harris team and the VP is suddenly doing every interview possible. And now we find out she's going into the high-risk situation. And every time she does, just like Joe Biden, she ends up with a problem. There's a reason why she's being protected. We have the latest on the race with 26 days left.
Number one.
Why do you think Trump is spreading misinformation?
I don't know. It's un-American. It's not who the hell we are.
Are we concerned about any misinformation?
There's been a lot of misinformation out there, Madam Vice President.
That's a tactic. This is all a tactic, making it political. The White House decides to take aim at Trump while making prep for Hurricane Milton, which we are discussing. A new low for American leadership, if you ask me. And you didn't, but you will. We will look at what Harris and Biden called misinformation while many struggle to find food and shelter in the North Carolina mountains. The Floridians are scrambling right now to find out what is left of their homes as the sun comes up. But instead, they're trying to score political points. I see right through it. I mean, I listened yesterday on the radio appropriately as they do this conference call for everyone to see Joe Biden reading from index cards, talking about questions he has for Mayorkas, the FEMA director, his vice president, pummeling questions out to sheriffs. I'm in touch and I'm in charge. All performative. First off, I'd like to thank you. First off, and second off, what a great job you're doing, Mr. President. And you're doing a great job, Mr. Homeland Security Secretary. Let me just say, with your leadership, we have managed to find a way through the most impossible, intractable situations. All performative for you. But no one's buying it. Along with the attacks. Now, I will talk about Milton for now. We're still trying to find out about storm surge and the damage. We're still seeing the top ripped off Tropicana Field, that horrible stadium. That the Rays play in, that they can withstand 150-mile-an-hour winds. They were stronger. There are people that lost their lives over in St. Lucie County at a retirement center, a retirement village area, which is mostly motorhomes. They had at least four deaths. But for the most part, it could have been a lot worse. Those aren't my words. They're the words of Governor DeSantis, who just gave a press conference, maybe the finest governor in the country. He says it made landfall at 8:30 last night in Siesta Key in Sarasota. The path of destruction is significant, but is not as bad as it could have been. Not worse. It's not worst case scenario was the exact words. The storm surge, not as bad as Helene from 2 weeks ago. Sarasota, for example, 8 to 10 feet. There's been 48 water rescues. And there's a situation where a third of all the gas stations are out of gas. So we'll track that, and you'll get that in front of the Weather Channel, and they'll do that. But I was just stunned because I was trying to get information to see how bad it is, to see if it's going to hit Jacksonville or Orlando and some of our great affiliates in Daytona and Tampa and other people, of course, in their way. And all I hear is this. Cut one.
Why do you think Trump is spreading misinformation?
I don't know. It's un-American. It's not who the hell we are.
Are we concerned about any misinformation or disinformation regarding evacuations that we need to clear up at this point?
There's been a lot of misinformation out there, Madam Vice President.
I'm going to divorce the disinformation that is being spread. Disinformation is harmful.
Okay. Let's get this straight. And then they went on earlier and later. It's hard to know what was on tape, what was real, what was happening live. They're all told misinformation, Donald Trump's irresponsible. They want to share, they want you to remember the way they remember Donald Trump. They say chaos, inappropriate, should not be leader of the free world. Well, 70 million people plus wanted him another 4 years. Wasn't enough. I got it. But now he's more popular than ever before. Even the left say that. Why? Because they feel as though they've seen this leadership, her and him, and they're not impressed. So they want to make him unhirable. So what do? Here's a crisis. He inserted himself, and he's incompetent. Well, let's just see what Donald Trump did. First off, he showed up with Samaritan's purse, called up Elon Musk, asked him to put Starlink in position to help the people of North Carolina, showed up right away with supplies where Joe Biden went to Rehoboth and Kamala Harris went to Nevada and then Los Angeles to a fundraiser. And then when they finally did realize how bad it was in North Carolina and the hills of Virginia and in parts of South Carolina, they quickly scrambled, but they never got the Army involved. And in the meantime, they have little announcements to show they're on top of things. Now, they say Donald Trump makes things up, that aid isn't getting there right away. Governors aren't complaining. Well, I know the aid wasn't getting there right away. I talked to people like Corey Mills and Choppers to say there's people here that they don't even know exist. That we're finding them. We're seeing them shooting mirrors at us while we're flying, and they land in the closest thing to a cleared field, and he hops out and he's helping them out. That's not FEMA. That's not the federal government. That's not the National Guard. These are people acting on their own. And the one thing they walked away with is saying no coordination. So if Donald Trump comes out and says there's a lack of organization, coordination, and speed, he's 100% right. Number two, when it comes to this price, you're only getting $750. Why is Donald Trump saying that? That's just wrong. Where would Donald Trump have heard that from? Let me see. Where would he have heard that you're only going to get $750? Let me see if I have that. Cut five.
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met.
That's why. So they see everything wiped out. They don't know if they can get a fresh set of clothes. They're told that they fill out an application, they get $750. It's a joke. And for her to say that like it's a great move is incredible. For him to, for President Trump to point out that that's not enough is not misinformation, is it? When Mayorkas hops on camera, right when this hits, and says, I'm out of money. I'm out of money. That is something that makes the President of the United States, the former President of the United States, say, how can you be out of money? Well, the FEMA fund includes money for illegal immigrants, their accommodations, their transportations, their education. Understand? So where would he get that from? Why would Trump just make that up? Cut 16.
Hey, Ms. Secretary.
No, I'm sorry. Cut 15.
We are meeting the immediate needs. With the money that we have, we are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
So where is the misinformation? $750? Is there going to be more money coming? Maybe. I don't know. I've been through fires in California. All my stuff got burned to the ground. The good news is I had very little. I was 30, not married, but I had literally just the clothes, my gym bag, and the clothes that I wore to work that day, and it wasn't a suit. I was editing. I wore loafers without socks. I wore a shirt I rarely wear and pants I rarely wear because I thought I was going to be editing all day. By the time I got back, all my stuff had burned. So I know what it's like to go through that process. And then, of course, with Superstorm Sandy, for 4 to 5 feet of water in my house, know all that. So I know what it's like. And it wasn't $750. I mean, if I had a vice president get up and say, "This, you're going to get $750, I'd be like, really? You got to be kidding me. And I have to fill out an application and process it first. And when you say that I don't have enough money, I'm supposed to take the HHS secretary at a word. They don't have enough money. And if you're Trump, you bring that up. And you look at the budget and say, where is all the money? Well, it's going to illegal immigrants. So I'll play more of that. But I'm just outraged, and I could not wait to get on the air and talk about it. So Senator Rick Scott's next. He'll tell us what the real deal is in Florida and bring us up to date. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It moved quickly across central Florida overnight, producing significant flooding and damaging winds near its path. The storm did bring much destruction and damage. Tornadoes ravaged parts of the east coast of the state. We will better understand the extent of the damage as the day progresses. And you have people that are out there assessing damage right now. First responders have been working all through the night to help people who were in distress.
So somebody that was Governor DeSantis 20 minutes ago, giving us the absolute latest on the storm that could have been a lot worse. But I'm sure we have not fully assessed the damage yet. Senator Rick Scott is in an area that really took a pounding in Naples, or was when we talked to him this morning. He is now senator, was a two-term governor, Homeland Security, Armed Services, and Budget Committee is where he served. Senator, welcome back. I talked to you at 6 in the morning. Now we're 3 hours later. What are you seeing?
Well, unfortunately, we know that we lost people in St. Lucie County with the tornadoes. So we know that our sheriffs, police departments, fire departments rescued a lot of people overnight. We know that we've got a lot of flooding around the state. So we have our search and rescue teams going in. At this moment, I haven't heard of any other fatalities. I hope people, when they look at Ian 2 years ago or look at Helene less than 2 weeks ago, they got out of harm's way. But we know, I mean, from traveling the coast in the last week, I know the people unfortunately stayed. So hopefully they survived. Hopefully they were high enough. Hopefully the storm surge didn't go high enough. Now the problem we have is we have people that, are now they made it through this, but you can't drive into standing water. You can't touch a down power line. You got to be careful of trees. They're going to continue to fall. This state's saturated with water. Hopefully we'll get no more tornadoes, but unfortunately there was loss of life that way. So then we've got a lot of crews coming in. Utilities are doing a great job getting crews in to get the power back on. Just here in Naples, we've got 30% of this county without power, but we've got counties with 50%+ of the people without power. So we got to stay safe. We got to keep people alive while we, assess our problems and start fixing our problems.
Right. So that's a good point. The other thing to keep in mind too is you guys started burying your lines, so you don't have down poles.
Yep.
How does that affect a catastrophe when a natural disaster happens like this?
Well, so it's the power lines go down primarily because tree falls on them. I mean, there's other reasons. The wind, pops things and breaks things. But downtown, without these trees going down, like in the area where I live, they have buried the lines over time, over the last 20 years. And so typically now we don't lose power as much. But these rural areas where they don't have the ability, it's too costly to bury the lines. And then there's maybe a home every half a mile. It takes a while to get to them, especially when these linemen have to work in water trying to restore electricity, which is very, very dangerous. So get out of the way of the linemen. We also are out of fuel in a lot of areas. We've got to get the fuel back out into our gas stations. So there's a lot of things. But you're right. Burying the lines has reduced the chance that you're going to lose power and the damage from this.
So this other subplot is befuddling to me. I was just stunned by it. Every official in the White House is saying Donald Trump's to blame for misinformation and the Republican Party misinformation. Listen to the president. Cut to.
Quite frankly, these lies are un-American, and there is simply no place for them. Not now, not ever. Former President Trump has led this onslaught of lies. Assertions have been made that property is being confiscated. That's simply not true. They're saying people impacted by these storms will receive $750 in cash and no more. That is simply not true either. They're saying that money needed for these crises are being diverted to migrants. What the heck are they talking about? Stop it. It's outrageous. It's just not true.
I was just addressing some of this, but I'd like Senator Rick Scott to address this.
Well, first off, Mayorkas said they run out of money.
Yes.
I talked to the administrator of the SBA. She says she has no money for the loan program. Right. So this is what they've said on their website. FEMA has said they've spent money on to take care of illegal immigrants. Right. So this is what they've said on their website. So it's not like Donald Trump is saying something that is untrue. He's basically saying what they have said about their own agencies. And by the way, Chuck Schumer didn't put more money into FEMA and the SBA to get ready for the storms. We went on recess. You know, he allowed some money to go forward,
yes,
on FEMA, but no new money. So I've said we got to go back. We got to make sure we have the funds to take care of not just Florida, but Georgia and North Carolina and East Tennessee and other places. So, but FEMA has said these things. Homeland Security has said these things, and now they want to say that's not true somehow.
And he said Mayorkas said it, and also FEMA does come out of their account for illegal immigrants. So put it this way, what about the choice? Governor, you have to deal with Democrats and Republicans all the time. You're in the middle of these hurricanes constantly as governor. Why would you ever take time to go point out a problem you have with a Democrat in your state? I'm amazed that he took half his time to attack Trump. The guy's playing politics in the middle of a hurricane.
Well, it's really disappointing how much, almost everything's become politics. What we need to focus on is keep people alive.
Yeah.
Start the recovery effort, do the search and rescue, and let's all work together. I talk to FEMA every day. I've been talking and texting back with the SBA administrator. I've said, tell me what I can do to be helpful to you. I want you to be successful. I met with the president on Thursday. I explained to him that Vilsack, the Secretary of Agriculture, has over the last 2 years not given us block grants to get the money out to our farmers. I didn't tell him that Trump did it. He did do it. But I said, I would like you to do that this time. We got to get the money out. We haven't gotten money out from 2 years of our farmers being injured. So this should not be politics. This should just be, let's take care of people.
It would be great. Real quick, on insurance, is the Florida insurance situation going to be able to take care of these people? Are they underfunded there?
Well, I dealt with this when I was governor. I've recruited more companies to come into the state. I downsized Citizens, the state, insurance plan. I fully funded the CAT fund. Since I've left, the prices have doubled. This has got to be fixed. We got to recruit more companies. We got to get rid of the fraud and abuse. We've got to have insurance companies.
Senator, I hope I get heartbreak, but thanks so much. I just want to address that. Senator Rick Scott, thank you.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What's happening now with Kamala Harris is, this is an experiment. Can you win a short campaign with an untested candidate? And what I'm telling you is happening in private polling is she's got a problem now, okay? It's not cheering for Trump. It's not predicting Trump will win. She's got a problem. For you Harris people on here complaining that we're talking about problems in the Harris campaign, you're welcome to put your head in the sand about it. If you want to go watch MSNBC Primetime and hear how great things are going for the Harris campaign, you're welcome to do that. But if you want to understand what's actually happening, we're here to tell you. I just saw some new private polling today that's very robust private polling. She's in a lot of trouble.
And that's Mark Halperin. He is not a conservative. I don't necessarily think he's a liberal. I think he's just trying to rehab his career, number one. But he's got great information. He got his source in the Democratic side that says she's in trouble. Now, think about it. We talked about this yesterday. Why else would you do 5 interviews in 3 days including 60 minutes she taped whenever, when you don't do any for the most part of 70 days, except one tandem interview with her terrible pick for vice president. Carville came out and said she's got to get more aggressive. Axelrod says she has plateaued. Halpern says the sources in the Democratic side said she's got a problem, and she's sliding. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, covers a lot of elections, including the challenges of and the unorthodox way in which Donald Trump run for president, his success and his big upside and his big downside. Rich, with 26 days out, I think Mark Halpern is saying what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You?
Yeah. So you look at this Quinnipiac polls, set of Quinnipiac polls from the Blue Wall yesterday, and Quinnipiac has not been favorable for Trump. And it shows her losing her leads in Wisconsin and Michigan, shows her ahead in Pennsylvania by 2 points. But the average in Pennsylvania, his real clear average, last time I looked at it a day or two ago, was literally tied. It wasn't like metaphorically tied with someone ahead by half a point, literally tied.
So let me tell everyone at home what it is. The Q poll says 51-47, Trump on top in Michigan, which I've never seen that with Harris involved. In 51-46, okay, 51-47, okay. And then they tell about like what they drill down on it. In Wisconsin, Trump 49, she's got 47. About a month ago, around August, I said, what do you think about Wisconsin, Michigan? He goes, we might pull out of Wisconsin. Man, has that changed. And in Pennsylvania, she, as you mentioned, she's trailing. He's trailing, which I can't believe. He has not been trailing there in a while, 49-47, and we'll see if that changes after the Butler rally or what have you. So that, and Arizona has been pretty secure for him for the last few months, and they've always felt good about Georgia. So it's on performance, Rich. It's not on a great ad, even though she's got so much more money and so many more ads. She's terrible.
Yeah, so these interviews, most of them, the exception was The View, where she said she couldn't think of anything that she did differently than Biden, which we're going to see in ads, and every Republican in the country is doing somersaults.
She said the same thing to Colbert.
Yeah, but besides that, you know, they're not gaffes in these interviews. She's kind of fine, but she's just fine and not compelling, and you get the sense there's just not much depth there, and I think that's what's created this plateau or this slight decline. But you know, if you assume Trump is going to win Pennsylvania, and I'm not saying we should assume that, but I had a good friend who's been around forever who's out spent some time out there, and he's like, Rich, he's going to win because it's like it's trending like Ohio, and the Scranton Joe thing that Joe Biden had going was ridiculous, but people kind of believed it, and she doesn't have any of that. She just doesn't have a connection there. So this friend of mine is just confident Trump wins Pennsylvania. If that's true, then the map totally opens up. Nothing else needs to change except for winning Georgia, for instance. With Pennsylvania and Georgia, Trump's over the top. So that those 19 electoral votes there are huge.
Yeah, I think so, too. Here's what Matt Latowry said with the he's a Polling Plus podcast. Cut 35.
Trump is winning in these states because we're seeing the African-American vote really collapse, not collapse in a massive way, but in a manner we've never seen among a Democratic nominee before, particularly with black men. Secondly, he's gaining among independents. Thirdly, the prediction models are all still trying to say that Harris is going to win, but they didn't catch that change momentum that we saw a couple of weeks ago, and now they're having to play catch up. In Florida, where we are tonight, and also North Carolina, there are concerns about turnout and making sure Republicans can get the vote. That's very critical. Good article by Craig Kashishian in the Daily Mail. I suggest people read it, talking about how Florida could become a problem after this hurricane, although Ron DeSantis, with his great job he's doing as governor, will probably keep that from taking place.
So a lot of that's happening. North Carolina and those hills are very Republican areas where they're trying to rebuild their lives and not worry about ballots. That could be an issue.
Yeah, definitely. And look, it's still a race that's in a nice edge. And if we're talking about Kamala plateauing or declining, it's still it's still extremely close. And most national polling, she's still ahead by 2 or 3 points. If the Electoral College tilts the same as it has been the last two times, that's not enough for her to win. But it, still, this thing's really close, and turnout could matter. And you got to assume on the turnout that the Democrat operation will be firing on all cylinders and is highly organized. And there's some questions about whether the Trump organization is at the same level. And, you know, these guys, he needs to reach these disaffected males who are sitting on their couch with a bong in front of them on the coffee table, you know, playing video games all day. He needs to convince some of those folks to get out. And that's why the kind of these unorthodox supporters like RFK Jr. and Elon Musk could make a difference.
Yeah, that's you're describing Pete's friends. Am I right? You don't, Pete. So I mean, Trump's got to do stuff too. He's got to perform. He's got to show up. One thing he's doing, he's going to go to blue states. He goes, I still think I could win New York and New Jersey. He's going to be at Madison Square Garden on the 27th. So he had so much success at the Nassau Coliseum, 16,000 plus, 5,000 on the outside. How do you feel about him going to Madison Square Garden?
I think it's Madison Square Garden is such a legendary venue that just packing it for a rally will generate massive news coverage. He's not going to win New York, right? If you literally think he's going to win New York, it's a waste of time. But if you think everyone's going to cover this thing, then it makes sense. And also, people forget, Brian, a lot of competitive House races, they're not in swing states. They're in California and New York. So if you can drive some coverage also to help those candidates, that makes a difference. But I'm always in favor of people packing Madison Square Garden. I think it's a great thing to do, except for the Rangers. I'm not a Rangers fan.
Right, but the Knicks are going to be good too. By the way, what a time to be a New York sports fan. I mean,
yeah,
you have
absolutely.
The Giants Mets playing surgeon. Sunday, the Mets playing Sunday, game one of the NLCS, and the Yankees playing Saturday. I think the Jets play on Monday night with a brand new coach.
Well, we don't want the Yankees to play Saturday. We want them to win tonight, and then they don't play Saturday.
Oh, wait a second. Yeah, another game is in Kansas City. Is that that's right? I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they look so flat, Rich.
The Yankees?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they managed to get over the top last night. They only got four hits. One, Giancarlo Stanton had three of them, including the clutch home run. So they got Garrett Cole going tonight. You want to avoid at all costs if you're a Yankee fan playing Saturday.
I think you're right. I also think that, can you imagine how good they would be when Soto and Judge, two of the top five best hitters in baseball, start playing? So,
yeah, I think Judge will come around. It's been a small sample size. You know, anyone can have a bad stretch for three or four games, but I expect him to come around.
All right, I want to talk about what's happening. Yesterday, for 30 minutes, and the first time in over a month, Joe Biden talked to Benjamin Netanyahu, at which time Condoleezza Rice told us yesterday she's just basically in awe of the operation to take out Hezbollah. Nobody thought this was possible. She thinks it's absolutely terrible they keep calling for a ceasefire or they leak out private conversations. Here's what Condoleezza Rice said about the situation in Lebanon. Cut 41.
The Lebanese people are held hostage by Hezbollah as much as Israel is held hostage by Hezbollah. And this is a chance for the Lebanese people, for decent government to emerge in Lebanon. Hezbollah killed the Rafiq Hariri, who was the well-beloved prime minister of Lebanon.
Massive
in 2005.
Car bomb, right?
Massive car bomb. Hezbollah has refused to allow Lebanon to have elections for the last 2 years, despite the fact that the formula for how that needs to take place is very, very clear. And so to the degree that Hezbollah is weakened, Lebanon has a chance to be free.
So it's nuanced. It's different from Gaza, where I don't know if there's a Palestinian you can work with. I think you absolutely can work with the Lebanese. So how do you do this, Rich? You got such depth of knowledge in this region.
I don't know. It would be great if Hezbollah is devastated and is out of the picture. And as Condoleezza was saying, you get a decent government and a decent representative government in Lebanon. I just wouldn't count on the ball bouncing the right way. It very often does not, as we know, in this region. But I'm totally with her. Obviously, just it's been awe-inspiring what Israel has done over the last month. And we still haven't seen what they're doing against Iran. You know, that's clearly coming. It's going to be, I think, subtle, and they're doing it on their own time frame. And there's a lot going on under the surface we don't know about. But that'll be another chapter here.
Here's what the secretary, the defense minister said, Gallant. They vowed on Thursday there'll be a strike on Iran. It'll be lethal, precise, and especially surprising. Now, the one thing I'd have to say when it comes to Iran and Hezbollah, there's a lot surprising there. So could it be the Ayatollah? I mean, there's nothing off the table. What do you think's possible? What does he mean by surprising?
I don't know. But if I were in Tehran and I were involved in the nuclear program or their terrorist operations or a high-level government official, I would not be sleeping well at night. And I'd be sleeping in a different place every night. That is one of the most threatening, given what we've seen, the context. You know, it's a fairly anodyne thing to say it'll be surprising. But given what we saw against Hezbollah, that could be anything. And this is not an idle threat. So if you can blow up pagers in the hands of every Hezbollah operative and make money on the operation, who knows what they have going in Iran.
Rich Lowry, it's an exciting time. 26 days left. We're excited you're joining us every week. Rich, thank you.
Thanks so much, Brian. Talk
All
to
right. 1-866-408-7669. The impact on Milton. Let's do it. How about politics and the role it plays? Intentional by Joe Biden. And when we come back, the passive-aggressive relationship between Biden and Harris, or at least their camps, it's impossible to ignore. I'll explain.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. President, does Governor DeSantis need to take Vice President Harris's calls?
All I can tell you is I'm talking to Governor DeSantis. He's been very gracious. He's thanked me for all we've done. He knows what we're doing. And I think that's important.
So that is part, more evidence of the passive-aggressive relationship that's emerging, if not in between Harris and Biden, certainly their camps. Many of which have left Joe Biden, so he's bitter outside his family, and jumped over a party that's left him in the dust totally. Why? It is making it even worse now because they don't mention him on the stump at all for every reason we've been discussing on the show. It's performance. Ever since Afghanistan, he has not been close to 50%. Most of the time, he's been high 30s, low 40s. So if you believe he's all there, his numbers make it look like he can't win. But I don't even believe he's all there. And there's another subplot in that they were covering for him all these years. The Wall Street Journal indicated that. And if Bob Woodward doesn't include it, his book should be tossed in the trash can. If they don't include Harris ineptness and Joe Biden freezing repeatedly, not engaging, not having a cabinet meeting in 2 years, if they don't include any of that, especially the aggressive way they went after Bush, he had one good Bush book and the other one was just very aggressive against him. And the way that he goes after Trump multiple times, then it's just don't even read it. But it's not just that. So he's mad at the Harris Group for not putting him in the speeches, not even mentioning him. He's upset that he's not even mentioned to go out on the stump as if he'd be an asset. He's upset that the whole party seems to have passed him by. And he's pouting by continuing to go at a Rehoboth and not do his job. But his job's getting serious. Middle East is in flames. And natural disasters is requiring a leader to take charge. And she is trying to lead, but she has no idea on how to do it. And the other thing to keep in mind is he is pushing the fact that Kamala Harris has been with him on everything. And she's been there every step of the way. She's been on every decision. Now, why is that important? Because the decisions have not been popular. The rescue plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a new Green Deal disguised, the infrastructure deal, the CHIPS Act, when nothing's being built, an infrastructure deal where only 8 terminals have been done, where you're pushing electric cars and it's destroying the gas car business and destroying the car industry, and we have to go to China for all this stuff. So instead of her walking away from that and talking about change, he keeps bringing her back. And talking about all they did together, that is passive aggressive, big time. And then when she comes out and says on The View and says to Stephen Colbert, what would you have done differently? Nothing. That ices it. That's the biggest boost to the Trump campaign. Trump was about to win by double digits over Joe Biden. She was new. She's 59, not 79, not 81. So she was new. She can read a prompter. And then she wasn't new and remembered who she was. And then she said, well, she's going to be new as a new leader. And she goes, no, I'm the same person. I'll do the same thing. I'm not against anything he did. Well, that's disastrous. And he did it. He attached her to him. And that's why it's going to make it twice as hard. Now, she should have been smart and thought about it with all her wordsmiths and with David Plouffe and Barack Obama sat down in a conference call and say, how do I do this? How do I do not alienate people that like Joe Biden, but at the same time let them know that his agenda is terrible and his performance is subpar? How do we do that? But instead, she came up with just answering the same question as if his agenda is my agenda. So good luck with that. And when you see her now trying to be the leader during these natural disasters, when it's already late, a week late to show up in North Carolina, they don't want to see her. And then in South Carolina, they handle it because they got good governors in Virginia. And in Florida, they got a fantastic governor, so he always handles it. Here's Mike Waltz on the need for leadership and what DeSantis has displayed and what Harris had to read off cards. Cut 18.
What I saw today is leadership. You have your sheriffs, your health department, your hospital reps, your utilities, your telephone reps. All they're working together in a fusion operations center. You have one in every county, and it's building on years of leadership like you saw from Rick Scott when he was governor, and the investments that he made in hardening our power lines, hardening our grid, putting those lines underground rather than above ground. So this is years of leadership. Florida will get hit hard, but we will bounce back.
Yes. And by the way, Mike Waltz is considering now, I think Trump, if Trump wins, he's going to ask him to do something significant. But he also is considering a run for governor along with Byron Donald. So they'll both be strong. And there's probably some other people that want to jump into it. But the problem with Mike Waltz would be just as good as DeSantis, more personable perhaps. But his forte is foreign policy and the military. And as much as there's a great, robust National Guard in Florida, I'm not sure that that uses all his skill set. But if you do want to be president eventually, it'll be nice to be a successful governor of a very key state. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. I'll be in Peekskill, New York, October 20th on stage, winning the war on history, history, liberty, and laughs, BrianKilmeade.com. Got some VIP tickets are still available. That's where I get to meet you before the stage show. See you there.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Ever, you might want to add ever, fastest growing. We continue to add great affiliates at a very vital time, 26 days to Election Day. Josh Krasher will be with us. He writes for the Jewish Insider, also Axios, Fox News political reporter. Mark Thiessen standing by. It comes to you from Midtown Manhattan, where the Al Smith dinner will take place next week. Another opportunity for both candidates to have an iconic appearance. They usually make fun of themselves and the others in the process. But evidently, Kamala Harris didn't want to go to it. Donald Trump says 60 minutes, you can keep it. She has a chance just to read off the prompter and be funny. And she's like, I don't even get it, but I'm not going. I think it's because it's a Catholic thing, personally. So before we get to Mark, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Ceasefires are not always the answer. A ceasefire may ultimately be the answer in Gaza because the Israelis at some point are going to want to go to something that looks more like counterterrorism operations in and out of Gaza.
On the same page, after 50 days of not talking, it seems Israel's success has Biden and Bibi showing a willingness to cooperate, at least for 30 minutes yesterday, and an inevitable attack back plan at Iran is being unfoiled.
Number two.
What's happening now with Kamala Harris is this is an experiment. Can you win a short campaign with an untested candidate? And what I'm telling you is happening in private polling is she's got a problem now. It's not cheering for Trump. It's not predicting Trump will win. She's got a problem.
That is Mark Halperin. New polls explain why the Harris team of the VP and the VP is suddenly doing every interview possible and now let her out in high-risk situations where the shows, which shows to me that they have to risk her not being protected. That means the polls are demanding it. A new debate is not happening. We'll talk about where we're at.
Number one.
Why do you think Trump is spreading misinformation?
I don't know. It's un-American. It's not who the hell we are.
Are we concerned about any misinformation?
There's been a lot of misinformation out there, Madam Vice President.
Every time I hear her talk, him talk right now, I always see Dana Carvey. Making it political, the White House decides to take aim at Trump while making preps for Hurricane Milton, a new low for American leadership. We're going to look at what Harris and Biden call misinformation. And while many struggle to find food and shelter in the North Carolina mountains and Floridians scramble to see what's left of their house and belongings. So joining us now is Mark Thiessen of The Washington Post. Mark, welcome back.
Good to be back with you.
All right, Mark, first off, yesterday out of nowhere, we see this performative conference call where everyone could watch and see that getting ahead of Milton, President Biden is in charge, at which time, on cue, they all claim misinformation and Donald Trump is the problem. Cut one.
Why do you think Trump is spreading misinformation?
I don't know. It's un-American. It's not who the hell we are.
Are we concerned about any misinformation or disinformation regarding evacuations that we need to clear up at this point?
There's been a lot of misinformation out there, Madam Vice President.
I'm going to divorce the disinformation that is being spread. Disinformation is harmful.
Right. So they go out of their way. Disinformation. Is that what's happening?
No. And you know what? When this is the time when the American people really don't want politics.
Yep.
I know it's hard during an election, but if you're in North Carolina or Georgia and your house has been destroyed, or if you're in Florida and you're told that one of the worst hurricanes in modern history is headed towards you, you don't care about the campaign. you don't care about politics. And the whole politicizing of this is just so, you know, and they're looking at, you know, the Democrats, and you've got Ron DeSantis standing there who's doing his thing, which is like running, you know, he is Mr. Efficiency in terms of running everything. Trump is being enormously helpful. He was getting the Starlinks into Georgia and other places when Biden and Harris were not even anywhere near the place. You've got, you know, Joe Biden literally hanging out on the beach while the first storm was hitting. You know, as someone who was in the White House during Katrina, I can't imagine how the media would have reacted if George W. Bush was hanging out on the beach during Katrina. And now they're trying to attack Trump. And it's just – people are just like, you know, enough of this shit. I'm sorry. I shouldn't.
Well, you shouldn't. You probably didn't. So I want you to hear this.
I hope you have the seven-second delay. Sorry.
We'll find out. So here's the president yesterday.
I got you fined.
Cut four.
And I asked this to our administrator. They said that you get $750 and that's it. You lost everything. You get $750. That's not it. That's just you're giving them immediately what you need to get by the
okay.
next day.
So what they said, how could you be given $750? Where did he get that from? Mark, where did he get it from? Cut five.
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met.
That's where he got it from. That's where he got it from that Mayorkas says he's out of money. It wasn't somebody bringing up that all the money has been spent elsewhere. Mayorkas the one said that we're out of money. Cut 15.
We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
So they looked at the ledger. Where else are you spending the money? Hundreds of millions of dollars on illegal immigrants. That's a logical leap, not misinformation.
Yeah. So, look, I worked on Capitol Hill for almost a decade. And if you have an emergency like this, you have a supplemental where you spend out the money you have in the tank and then you go back in and refill the coffers for them. But what Americans are seeing and why they're frustrated is because they're being told that there's not enough money in the coffers. But at the same time, we're sending aid to Lebanon. You know, we're sending aid to the people who are in the crossfire.
I know.
You know, and it's just like, first of all, why would we do that? And second of all, why are we doing that? And we're giving Americans $750. I mean, this is not anyone saying this is literally based on what the administration is saying. People are upset about this. It has nothing to do with Trump or anybody else pointing out what the administration is saying. So, you know, they see the administration announce saying, you know, whatever $100 million to Lebanon
right.
and $750 for North Carolina. So, you know, they're sort of getting wrapped up in their own miscommunication or their own, language.
So Nikki Haley, you wrote a column about why Nikki Haley is not being deployed yet. Why don't you think the Trump team is asking her? She's already volunteered to help. Unless you think it was insincere, And what do you think she would bring?
Well, so here's the thing. Nikki Haley, first of all, there's about 18% of the electorate. I know this election is very close, and I know people are saying that Kamala Harris is worried. There's about 18% of the electorate that has still not firmly made a decision. They're either undecided or these are likely voters who say they're leaning Trump, they're leaning Haley, but Kamala, but they haven't made a firm decision yet. Those people are up for grabs. Those are persuadable voters out there. It's a significant part. And a lot of those are Haley voters. And a lot of those she got 4.4 million votes in the Republican primaries, including almost a million votes in the six key swing states.
Of course.
Those voters could determine the election. And so what the polls show is that their number one concern, they don't care about only 3% say they're concerned about Trump is abortion. Only 3% say it's concerns about his criminal cases. 7% say it's a threat to democracy. 43% say it's character. It's his temperament. It's his honesty. They just don't like the guy. They like his policies. They don't like him. So who is the model? Is there somebody out there who shares their concerns about Donald Trump but is voting for him anyway? And who can make the case why you should do so? I mean, Nikki Haley is that. She's the model of the reluctant Trump voter. So someone who shares their concerns because she ran against him and she pointed them out during the primaries, but has decided that in the face of the threat from the Democrats, she's supporting Donald Trump. And she's going to pull the lever for him. Why would you not deploy her in every swing state to go to those voters who share her concerns and have her explain why she's doing it?
Well, here's the devil's advocate part of it, is that she was just as brutal on Trump as Biden. And people will say to her, that's what I think the image is. You know, why did you change your mind? You said he was too old. You said he's lost a step. And I agree with you, but just to be devil's advocate, that's what I think the Trump people are thinking.
Yeah, so that's exactly the reason why she should be deployed, is because she raised all those concerns. Those are all the concerns that these voters have. This election is not going to be decided by MAGA voters. It's going to be decided by that 18% of the electorate that has deep concerns about Donald Trump, but needs to vote for him anyway in their own self-interest because they know they were better off when he was president. They know he's a better choice than Kamala Harris, but they just don't like him. And you need to deploy somebody who is credible with those voters. And Nikki Haley is precisely because she made those critiques of him. And I'm sorry, but she's not, you know, he was considering Doug Burgum for his vice president. He ran against him.
But not aggressively.
Lots of people Yeah, but I mean, there's lots of people who have been critical of him, who ran against him, who ended up being allies. I mean, I'm sorry, J.D. Vance called him a Nazi.
Oops.
And he's the vice president.
Right. That's a good point. Here's Mark Halperin, who is not a conservative commentator. He provides insight into polls, and this is what he found out. Cut 33.
The conversation I'm having with Trump people and Democrats with data are extremely bullish on Trump's chances in the last 48 hours. Extremely bullish. You think of the seven battleground states. Which ones is Harris in danger of losing? I would say Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia. I'm not saying she'll lose all six, but she's in danger. The only one that the Democrats say she's not in danger of losing is the one I never say the name of because I can't pronounce it. But it's where Las Vegas is, right? You guys agree with me. She could lose any of those six. Right. I mean, she could lose all seven, but Democrats will tell you they're worried about those six. They're less worried about the seventh.
Your thoughts. Are you hearing that, too?
It's Nevada, not Nevada. For Mark, in case he needs to actually say it. I mean, it's in the whole race is in play. It could go either way. But I mean, if you look at the Real Clear Politics average, there's not a single one of those six states that is outside the margin of error. And, you know, that's worse for Democrats, I think, because I think that Trump tends to outpoll the polls on election night. But, yeah, he could definitely win this, but she could win it, too. I just think that you can't – this is why he needs to be – he seems so reluctant to make a clear appeal to voters who don't like him, like his policies, but don't like him. And it's not just the Nikki Haley thing. I mean, I don't think he addresses them on a regular basis. I think his rallies are amazing. I'd like to see him do a town hall in some of these states with some of these undecided voters. Because first of all, you know, I've spent a lot of time with him. He's incredibly charming one-on-one. If he did a town hall in each one of those states with groups of undecided voters and ask their question, answer their questions, and let them say, why do you say things like that? And you know, say to them, look, sometimes I fight dirty, but I'm fighting for you. You know, or just give them some give them permission to vote in their self-interest. If he does end up losing, that's going to be his failure to do that is going to be why.
Well, I mean, you interview him a lot. Does that come up?
Yeah, you know, so I interviewed him in Mar-a-Lago a couple of weeks ago. And I said to him, you know, so, Mr. President, this election is going to be decided by a handful of voters in a handful of swing states. And he said, maybe, or maybe I'll win by a lot. Yeah. He didn't seem to buy the premise of my question at all. He thinks it could be a landslide in some of these states. Maybe he's right. Maybe, you know, look, Donald Trump has been right and I've been wrong before. So, you know, maybe he's got a beat on the American people in a way that I don't. And if he does, God bless him. I hope he wins. But I just think it's political malpractice to not be aggressively going after the swing. Look, his MAGA voters, after two assassination attempts, is there a single person who's a Donald Trump supporter who's not going to get to the polls, who probably is already going to get their early ballots despite their concerns about early ballots and vote for this man? They're going to walk over hot coals to vote for him. It's the reluctant voters, the reluctant Trump voters, not the never Trump voters, the not Trump again voters. You know, okay, he was a great president, but I just can't do this again. But Kamala is so bad. What the hell do I do? That's what a lot of people are thinking right now. It's like the Democrats aren't giving me a benign alternative. I don't like Trump. I liked how I know my life was better under Trump, but I just didn't like him. What do I do? And you got to give them a reason to vote in their self-interest. And I don't see a campaign doing that.
So the Q poll's out and Trump versus Harris in Michigan, 51-47 Trump. When they asked him about Wisconsin, it was 49 Trump, 47 Harris. He's actually losing in Pennsylvania by two, which I thought was his strongest of the Midwest states, of the blue wall states. They, for a while, thought we were going to give up on Wisconsin. The Q poll, just put that in perspective, Mark.
Yeah, it's tight as a tick. I mean, again, not one of these is outside the margin of error. So, I mean, it's a tie.
Yeah,
it's a tie in every one of these states. And so you don't leave any votes on the table. You don't leave any votes at that. And maybe he thinks that in the end, people are just going to look and say, look, you know, inflation is what it is. The world is on fire. I'm just going to vote for him. And he doesn't have to ask. But it's what's the harm in asking?
Yeah, you work so hard. Why leave anything undone? And, you know, he's doing two events a day. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care, Brian.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I have some time to take some of your calls. And at the bottom of the hour, we welcome in Josh Krasshour. We're also following the aftermath as the sun is now up on Milton. We'll bring you the latest. There's been quite a few water rescues, I understand, too. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So all of the agony, all of the suffering, all of the inflation and the border and the criminals coming into our country, she wouldn't have done anything different than this guy that should have really never been president, in my opinion, should have never been president. So she said that there'd be nothing. And to me, that is a disqualifying answer. That should disqualify her from even running.
And even her answer, it goes on for 65 seconds, and she doesn't even say a word. So she goes on, says, well, I really like his agenda, and I feel as though I don't want to insult somebody to give me the break of a lifetime. But I will say I take things in a different direction, just like George H.W. Bush took things in a different direction than Ronald Reagan. It doesn't mean he didn't like Ronald Reagan. There's so many answers which you could workshop before you get out to these friendly interviews with Howard Stern, The View, and Stephen Colbert, which, by the way, this is all trending. Frank Luntz said the same thing. Frank Luntz, nonpartisan, does a lot of these focus groups. Venus is in Panama City. Hey, Venus.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How did you make out? You guys okay?
We're okay. It went down further south, so we're good. Okay. We had Hurricane Michael, but that gentleman you had on was amazing.
Mark Thiessen.
Because I voted for Trump the first time, but then he concerns me because the way he comes across. I'm from Long Island, New York, and I know how he is. But after he was the first attempt to kill him, he was humbled. And I thought, okay, I feel more better. I can vote for him now. And then he just flipped the script again. I mean, it's not safe. I'm a minority female, Puerto Rican, totally conservative. And I voted for him, but I don't know if I feel safe voting for him now.
What do you mean? What would make you feel unsafe?
Well, because it's the way he approaches different subjects. You know, as a minority, am I going to be safe when he becomes president? Is he dividing the country in a way that it shouldn't be? Like I said, he had the economy really good. I am not a Kamala Harris fan, and to be honest with you, I don't want to vote at all. And this is the first time.
All right, Venus, go out there and vote. And I just think if you love this last administration, you have an opportunity to continue it. If you like the previous one, a lot of the stuff that divides, a lot of those comes from the attacks.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Wall Street Journal has a story about Democrats really worried about the three Rust Belt states. We all know from our contacts in both campaigns that Pennsylvania is tough for her right now. And without Pennsylvania, there are paths, but there aren't many. There's no path without Wisconsin. So you see here, Tammy Baldwin's Senate campaign poll shows Harris down 3 in Wisconsin. We all said yesterday, Wisconsin and Michigan are looking worse for Harris than before.
What's interesting, too, is on the Senate candidates, it looks like Mike Rogers is moving up in Michigan. You know, he's a great candidate. Even Democrats know it. He's very formidable, even if it is somewhat of a blue state, pretty much a blue state. Hovde is doing well in Wisconsin now. And then you have Bernie Moreno. We told you 2 weeks ago he was on the move there. It looks like Sheehy is en route to salting that away early. And then we know about West Virginia. What does that mean for the Senate? But overall, for the race, Josh Krasauer also has his finger on the pulse of the political system. He's our political analyst on radio, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, what are your thoughts about Mark Halperin getting these Democratic insider polls and them coming forward with it? It sounds like what we've been hearing, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mark does a lot of report. I always like to say actions and reporting speak as loudly as the polls. And everything I'm hearing on the ground from a lot of the big Senate races, especially, are that Kamala Harris is not in the lead. She's either tied or behind in some of the most important swing states in the country. And I think in the last week or two, there's been a little bit of a lag. I think part of it is the lackluster interviews that she's been doing this week. And I also think the decision to do interviews after playing what I would call political prevent defense, pretty much avoiding the press for much of that post-convention period, and then all of a sudden doing a 180 strategy shift in going on 60 Minutes, going on The View, Howard Stern, you name it. It's a sign that she probably is looking at her own internal polling and sees she needs to turn things around. So I think that speaks volumes. Also, the handling of the administration handling of Hurricane Helene, the perception that there was not enough preparation, slow response, whether you agree with that perception or not, that's a political reality in North Carolina and Georgia and even in other parts of the country that is going to have an impact on the race.
Those two things
I think have moved the needle a little more in Trump's direction over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I think she's very similar to Biden. When he started panicking, thought he was losing the nomination, he did a press conference. He did two or three national interviews. He started doing two or three events a day to show everyone he was okay. But in each one of those events, he left having at least one area somewhat concerning, something he said or a question he didn't answer. James Carville says she's got to get more aggressive. Axelrod says she has plateaued, but it's typical. You have to plateau and you have to answer the call. Does she have another gear? So it seems to be in the last 48 hours, the candidate of joy seems to not be very comfortable in any setting. She didn't look comfortable, in my view, with Howard Stern or Stephen Colbert. And the image of opening up a beer while Milton's bearing down on Florida. In North Carolina, people are still trying to dig out their relatives out of the mud in the hills after Helene. It seemed to me somewhat tone deaf.
Yeah, Brad, Kamala Harris is a politician who's always been comfortable with the sort of the prepared statements,
yeah,
the set pieces of politics. So going back to her role as a prosecutor in San Francisco, or her pre-written statement during the Kavanaugh hearings that was very, very partisan, or, you know, more recently at the debate where she practiced for almost a week in Pittsburgh and was holed up and didn't do a whole lot of events and got her lines and executed it effectively. Where she hasn't been effective throughout her political career has been actually talking about policy and actually having the kind of comfortable conversations, even in friendly settings like The View or Howard Stern, which I watched much of, and I thought she came across quite scripted and didn't seem very authentic in settings that were supposed to be home field advantage for her. These are easy questions, softball interviews. That was the whole point of doing the interview circuit this week. And, you know, I, at best, I don't think she just looked comfortable or authentic. And I think she still has an issue, politically speaking, convincing moderate independent voters who think she's too far to the left. And she has a long paper trail of progressive left-wing positions she took in the 2020 presidential campaign. And if you look at the data, there's still a lot of people who are, you know, moderate-minded, maybe socially a little more center-right, that are uncomfortable and they're not convinced that her values match their values. And that's the hurdle she's trying and not really successful right now at trying to overcome.
Yeah, just interesting because, you know, she did do the fundraiser. She is vice president. She did do the Nevada appearance the day the weekend that the hurricane hit. We know that the Army could have been deployed quicker. We know that if you really were on top of things, if it was going to hit the hills, there would be type of terrain issues. And she showed up much later, and she came out being angry at DeSantis, says, Governor DeSantis doesn't call me back. And he said, you got to be kidding me. Calling you back, you're not in the chain of command. You've never called before. Why would I call you back? Here's more from DeSantis, Cut 13.
My job is to manage this process and lead the state through this. I am using every lever at my disposal, including federal government resources. I've marshaled all the agencies in the state government, and we're working like never before to supplement our local communities. I've got to get the job done, and that's what I'm focused on. Now, people have asked me about, you know, is FEMA going to do this? Just let me be clear, in Florida, we run the show. FEMA's not running the show. We will utilize them to support some of the things we're doing, but you are not going to see FEMA running amok in Florida. I know that's been out there on the internet. That is not going to happen. I'm the sheriff that's in charge here, and we will make sure to protect you. Don't worry about it.
Right. So that's a guy that's in charge, and you wouldn't even entertain taking a call from her. But I think it's kind of interesting when asked, when Joe Biden was asked, you know, do you think that DeSantis should call back the vice president? Here's what he said, cut seven.
Mr. President, does Governor DeSantis need to take Vice President Harris's calls?
All I can tell you is I'm talking to Governor DeSantis. He's been very gracious. He's thanked me for all we've done. He knows what we're doing. And I think that's important.
What do you think?
Boy, I mean, Biden didn't give his vice president a lifeline.
He didn't.
That was one of many, frankly, recent examples where the White House has sort of been stepping on the Harris campaign. It makes you wonder if there's still sore feelings about Harris pushing Biden aside as the Democratic nominee.
I think there is. Come on, Josh. You think there is, too. You got to be.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, putting connecting the dots there. You know, as far as – I mean, DeSantis is – hurricane preparedness and response. I mean, he is his element. That's leadership in action, and he doesn't suffer fools lightly. You could hear that from that press conference. You know, and part of, you know, leadership is being ahead of the curve, understanding there's a storm coming and making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And thankfully, Milton certainly caused quite a bit of destruction, but may not have been quite as bad as feared. So, I mean, if you are able to check that box and not have a lot of angry Floridians upset about, you know, the pace of recovery, you that's a victory for a governor or for a leader in when it comes to hurricane management. Look, Harris is stuck between. I mean, I kind of feel bad for her as she gets blamed as vice president because she wasn't really involved in. She was on the campaign trail. She was doing fundraisers before Hurricane Helene, so she wasn't really, attuned to things. But she doesn't really have any formal responsibility. She's sort of, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place. She's sort of held hostage to the Biden reaction to in the preparation for the hurricane, which seemed to be pretty slow in reacting to Hurricane Helene. But then she's trying to overcorrect with Milton, and she you know, DeSantis basically said, you don't have a role in this. You like step away. So it's part of the challenge of being a vice president, where you're held responsible for the president's mistakes, but you also don't have a formal role where you can actually say, I'm doing X, Y, and Z.
So you see that in the Quinnipiac poll, he's winning. Trump is winning in Michigan and Wisconsin, trailing by one or two in Pennsylvania. And then when you see the looks like Rogers moving up there, it looks like he's making progress. And it makes you wonder how much of Michigan will hinge on how things go with Israel, because there's such a an Arab presence in the region. And then we find out that Netanyahu and Biden did have a good 30-minute discussion. They've had unbelievable success against Hezbollah, and they have an attack back against Iran all queued up. So you wonder what role Netanyahu could play in this election, knowing how Harris has shown her opening disdain for him. What do you expect to be the next step there? Because there's pressure not to make sure that Lebanon doesn't turn into Gaza.
Yeah, look, I actually was sort of struck recently that you looked at the 60 Minutes interview. Kamala Harris said the biggest geostrategic threat for the U.S. was Iran, which is something more hawkish and perhaps more tougher than she said in the past. I know she's mentioned it at other times, but she really kind of laid it out there at the 60, and I thought that was maybe one of the better moments of that interview. And I was watching one of the Michigan Senate debates between Alyssa Slotkin, the Democrat, Mike Rogers, the Republican, and Slotkin said, I'm a hawk on Iran. Like, she basically was backing kind of the BB plan to go after and respond to Iran, you know, 100%. So I think the politics are shifting. I've noticed, you know, these subtle changes in how Democrats, including the White House, are responding to Netanyahu and the response that they're planning to give after Iran, you know, launched about 200 yeah. ballistic missiles into Israel just a couple weeks ago. I think Democrats realize that being tough on Israel or being not supportive of Israel at a moment of threat for them, it's a political loser, and they're trying to compensate accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite intriguing to see how these campaigns are going to respond in these last 26 days. And then Israel has this thing called survival very much in the forefront of their mind. And we're supplying most of the weapons, but they have been unbelievable in their offensive tactics and taking down their enemies. There's no way when Sinwar pulled this off and scripted this could be going as planned. I don't care what anybody says. But there's no way because he knows that his days are number two. Josh, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
But it is brutal what they suffered with the Israeli people suffered with 1,200 dead. And then the humiliation of watching this anti-Semitic behavior in London and New York and in all these Ivy League colleges. You wonder where that came from. I do, too. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There was one tweet that was telling people not to evacuate because of there was some collusion between FEMA and a security team that wouldn't let people back into their homes. That was obviously...
Guys, listen. I think most people are wise to this. You know, we live in an era where if you put out crap online, you can get a lot of people to share it and you can monetize that. That's just the way it is, but if you're hearing things, something that's just outrageous, just know, in the state of Florida, none of that stuff would ever fly.
See, isn't that a great way to handle misinformation? I'm not going to attack Joe Biden. I'm not going to attack Donald Trump. I'm not going to attack Rick Scott. I'm going to just say, listen, it's crap. It's online. People got to be you have to disseminate things. I'm not going to chase down every conspiracy theory. Instead, we know what happened yesterday. They went after Donald Trump saying they're passing misinformation is going to get people killed. That's exactly Governor DeSantis. Do you think he had to read off cards for that? Do you think he had to? Joe Biden literally had to read off cards to attack Donald Trump. Do you think he had to? And look, this is why I think if Ron DeSantis can just change a few things about his approach to running for president, he's showing every day he can be president and he can handle multiple problems at the same time. I think you're seeing that right now. Now, without politics involved, because he's out of it, he's not even a top surrogate. I think we're seeing that. It would be a great discussion. Should we get a winner on election night? It's going to be a great discussion over the next 4 years because he's got two more years at that job, and then he's term limited out. Youngkin's got two more years at his job, then he's term limited out. And you have this. I don't think Marco Rubio loves being senator. I'm not sure if he'll join the administration. But Tom Cotton, I think he'll be Secretary of Defense if Trump wins. It's going to be interesting to see that. But that's how you handle it. Misinformation online, what are you going to do about it? I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to curse my generation. I'm not going to yell at somebody. Use your head. Charles, listening in Stuart, Florida. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good.
I have a statement and a question.
Okay.
I noticed that at my age, I never seen real hatred before until Trump won and the Democrats just got ugly. I mean, real ugly. And what really kills me is that they say they care about the environment and they overpopulate the country with how many millions of illegals. And that's a strain on our resources, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what about I'm not going to mine for rare earth, but I'm going to make everyone get an electric car and buy the batteries from China. I mean, that's we're going to make everybody get solar panels, but we're going to have to buy them from China. So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. There's no strategy there. There's so much anger towards Trump, and he's not an anti-environmentalist. He's a practical guy that wants to do what's best for the country. The problem is they don't like his approach to things. They don't like his bare knuckle, throw off the gloves and start mixing it up way of going at it. And I just think that if they treated him fairly, it would eliminate maybe 80% of the unorthodox behavior, let's say. Lewis, listen on WTRC in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Lewis. Lois, I'm sorry.
Hello. I just was listening this morning and listened to the lady who was from Cuba, I believe, and was worried about voting for Trump. And I voted for Trump twice. I voted already for Trump this year.
Yep.
And I can't understand why anybody would be afraid. I watch his actions, I watch his politics, and I watched Kamala Harris for years. As far as I'm concerned, I don't understand people anymore, period. Okay?
Lois is referring to Trump. Just let me tell the rest of the audience, Lois, you're referring to a caller I had who said, I voted for Trump before, but he scares me. He scares me how he's basically going to treat women, which is crazy because he's going to have women in powerful places everywhere. With his administration, what he does is he doesn't treat women any different than men. And a lot of people are shocked by that. But that's the way he is. But I think that he's going to put himself with people if he wins that aren't going to be sycophants, but they're going to understand him. And that's key. And it's going to be men and women in powerful places. You talk to Kellyanne Conway. Women have nothing to worry about with President Trump. He'll be their biggest advocate. Alex in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I think if you read online on social media conspiracy theory and it's written by someone on the right, you shouldn't 100% go with it, but you could check it out and it might be true. Whereas if it's written by someone on the left, it's a lot more likely that it's wrong and false because Republicans, most of the conspiracy theories out there by the right, like the Hunter Biden laptop, so-called conspiracy theory, and the vaccine things that people were saying about it not working, as well as other so-called conspiracy theories, turned out to be right. So we have a pretty good track record.
Remember, he said they're spying on my campaign. Right. He said, "Remember," and they said, "You're crazy." He goes, "They're spying on my campaign," and he told Leslie Stahl that, and they were. The FBI was, and we found that out. They never were forced to be accountable on that. Susan in upstate New York. Susan.
Oh, yes. Hi. I was also calling in to, speak about what the nice lady from Florida and her concerns about being safe under President Trump. I think that all the evidence is that we were much less safe under the Harris Biden administration. She hasn't lifted a finger to help children or women's or crime, and that the amount of now we know criminals, violent criminals that are here, are going to prey on all women. She's not going to do anything. It's going to get worse.
I hear you. That's amazing. That one call has spawned so much interest because it was a woman that said, I voted for him before, but I'm afraid as a woman. And I'm saying, let's just say it's sincere. It really struck me because I never thought that. She said a Hispanic woman. He's getting more of the Hispanic vote than any Republican.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. We have a lot going on today. We're following the latest hurricane to slam into the East Coast. We're dealing with the aftermath right now and trying to find out with the sun up how much damage it actually done. But for the most part, as DeSantis told us earlier on Fox and Friends, it could have been a lot worse. The worst case scenario hasn't happened, but he did not want to overstate it. Also, we're following this the election, and we're going to be going out into 2024. And first time in a long time, we have a president of the United States meet with Benjamin Netanyahu, and they didn't yell at each other. They actually had positive things to say about the meeting, and it was the first time in 50 days that President Biden has spoke to Benjamin Netanyahu in the biggest crisis in Israel history, at which time they're in the process of taking down two terror groups and maybe our nemesis in the Middle East. Trace Gallagher all over it. You'll listen to him on Fox News at night right after Gary Gutfeld at 11 o'clock. And he's right now in studio. Trace, great to see you.
Good to see you, Brian.
Is there a part of you that's jealous of all the hurricane coverage that you're not out there?
I've been doing it for 30 years. I was saying last night we were kind of covering this thing until the wee hours of the morning. And I was saying, you know, I started during Andrew, right, back in 1992, and have been covering hurricanes for a long time and really have never seen anything like this. When we were getting the reports late evening about 116 tornado warnings, not just watches. These are warnings where people actually saw tornadoes. I have never seen tornadic activity like that associated with a hurricane. And you show, I know Ron DeSantis says that it was not the worst case scenario. Very hard to make that argument when you're down in St. Lucie County and you have fatalities down there, four confirmed right now. It may get worse. So it depends on where it hits. But yes, for the big cities, for Tampa, not nearly as bad as they thought it was going to be.
By the way, 19 tornadoes, they were saying 55,000 were in shelters. Six of the 17 were packed out. Mm-hmm. A quarter of the gas stations don't have gas, but they already have some gas trucks coming in. And 2,200 flights minimum are canceled today. And in St. Lucie County, they said 17 twisters have been reported in there alone, one of which blew up the Spanish Lakes County Club Village, which is a senior village, means mostly mobile homes.
Right.
They killed four people. It was ravaged.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. No one's minimizing it, but the way they were describing it at first, thought it could have been a lot worse.
Well, but the interesting thing about that is you look at St. Lucie County, Brian, it's down in South Florida, right? So this thing hit Siesta Key. And then Siesta Key, which is six and a half miles from Sarasota, it was projected to go kind of right up the belly through Tampa. And then it kind of slid a little bit south. It hit Sarasota, 60 miles south of Tampa. And so if you're in South Florida and you're in, you know, St. Lucie County, you don't really feel like you're in peril. You're down there. You're not really in the eye. You're not in the evacuation zone. So it's hard to really put blame on these. And all of a sudden, you get hit with this onslaught of tornadic activity. That's the surprising thing about this is the preparedness was good, but you don't know the ramifications of when this thing is going to spawn different problems.
So I didn't know what we're going to be able to talk about today. It's pretty much aftermath. But I'm going to walk away with this over the last 2 weeks, and that is that President Biden thinks this is a great time to call out Donald Trump. I'm astounded. He's saying, well, the disinformation has got to stop. He went out of his way yesterday to make this clear. And so did his entire team. Listen to this. Cut one.
Why do you think Trump is spreading misinformation?
I don't know. It's un-American. It's not who the hell we are.
Are we concerned about any misinformation or disinformation regarding evacuations that we need to clear up at this point?
There's been a lot of misinformation out there, Madam Vice President.
I'm going to divorce the disinformation that is being spread. Disinformation is harmful.
So you know what they're doing. They're reading from the same script, literally in Joe Biden's case, actually reading from the card.
Yeah. I mean, this is the same as, is Joe Biden cognitively there? And they say, oh, he's never been better. Oh, my God. This is deep fake AI stuff. The misinformation thing. There's nothing I love more than being lectured by Alejandro Mayorkas about disinformation, the king of disinformation, the man who 100 times, including in front of Congress, said the border is secure, is lecturing us about disinformation. And the question is, why is the media, why are the Democrats all on the same page? They don't give us a examples. They don't say this is what's wrong, this is the thing. They just say the narrative, and then it is parroted again and again and again. And the whole concept about Joe Biden going after Donald Trump with the un-American thing, why is it always assaulting democracy, un-American? Why can't he just disagree with him? Why can't he say, right, listen, we disagree with him, we don't think this is the case. Instead, it's always un-American.
So a couple of things. What they said is, who's saying that you only give $750 out? Who's saying that FEMA is out of money? Okay, they are. And they're responding to what Kamala Harris said, cut five.
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met.
Okay, that's where the $750. Now, could there be more money? Yeah, that's not the point. Why would you carry? Hey, I know you lost everything. Here's $750. Where do you even get that number from? And the other one is Mayorkas. Remember, he said this October 2nd, cut 15.
We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
So that's what he's saying. You have FEMA funds for illegals, but where are the FEMA funds for Americans in peril? That's not misinformation.
And the question to Karine Jean-Pierre from Peter Ducey was the following. It was very simple. Why is it that we have to have congressional approval to give Americans money for disasters, for natural disasters, and yet we can continue giving money to illegal immigrants without congressional approval? That was the problem, because the fund was so low. Nobody was conflating, and yet, oh, they're all saying it's coming from the same thing. Nobody is saying that disaster fund money is being diverted to the illegal immigrants, but it's FEMA money. It all comes from the same source, which is American taxpayers, and just because they're in separate buckets doesn't mean it does not come from FEMA, and it's got exact different rules on how you allocate it. So to say there's misinformation is absolutely false.
Right.
The money is going to illegal immigrants, and the money that is going to disaster relief efforts is wanting.
So do you know what happened in New York? This is getting even worse, not only because they're mired in scandal, and I think it's not necessarily unrelated, even though the mayor's not necessarily playing the perfect game. When he came out and said, I can't afford this, federal government's got to step in, you got to control the border, I got 67,000 people here, and I have nowhere to put them, I'm putting them on AstroTurf fields and over at Randall's Island. Yesterday, he came out and said, New York City now needs 14,000 hotel rooms to shelter migrants throughout 2025 at a cost of $2.3 billion. Mm-hmm. We have 150 hotels packed out, paid top price. So the hotel owners are more than happy to sell out.
Sure.
So they pay 150 hotels are currently, we are paying rent for these illegals at a cost of $5.76 billion. Think about the kids in schools, the after-school programs, the daycare that could be coming, where that could be going.
And take the money out of it for 1 second and think about the kids in schools. You stop right there in your argument. Think about the kids in underserved school across this country that are now being flooded with illegal immigrants. So they now get half the education. They have to hire people who speak Spanish. They have to hire people that speak different languages. They can only teach half of the curriculum that they're teaching in schools. Barack Obama Middle School in Los Angeles, where 48% of the eighth graders made the honor roll, but not a single student, not one student can read or do math at grade level. If you don't think
public school,
that education in a public school, if you don't think that's the racism of 2024, you got to think again. These underserved schools need help. They need help, and they're not getting it.
So these kids come in, and you know what the teachers are told? Pass them through.
That's right.
So
that's right.
The bigger story, though, idiotically, Vance and Trump talked about eating cats and dogs. Instead of saying these kids from Haiti, through special provisions, come into this town, and they might be the best kids in the world, but they speak French Creole. Where does Springfield get French Creole teachers?
Right.
They overwhelm the entire system, the entire school. They're paying in this small town to house all of them. But we got caught up, or they willingly got caught up in they're eating the cats and dogs in the area. That's the story.
If New York, the metropolitan area of New York, cannot handle 120,000 migrants, how in the world does Springfield handle 20,000? How in the world does Aurora handle 20,000? What do you do with them? Where do you place them? Yeah. How is there any possibility of making these people welcome and part of the community? You do not have the resources, and nobody has the money to do that.
Trace is here. Normally he's out of our LA Bureau doing his great show, Fox News at Night. So Trace, what is the latest with reparations? You guys were the first to study reparations. Well, the study comes out, and the African-American community is owned, even though California is not a slave state,
right.
California decides they owe millions. What happened?
What happened is that Gavin Newsom punted on the whole reparations thing. Gavin Newsom said, well, listen, we're going to apologize, but there's not to be any money.
No money.
And so now you have all of these groups angry, saying, wait a minute, we've been studying this. We've given you several different proposals, and now you're saying, well, you know what? We're going to apologize because we were wrong, even though California was never a slave state. We were wrong, so we're going to apologize, but there's no money. Because there is no money, right? That's the whole point. He knows, and everybody else
What's
knows,
your budget
there
now?
Is no money.
Aren't it,
we're over $85 billion in deficit. That's the whole thing. Now that's the math this week. You know, 2 months ago, they were like, maybe 91, maybe 65. It's between 65 and $91 billion deficit right. for California, which 3 years ago had $120 billion surplus.
He just recently voted down or vetoed the opportunity to pay illegals for college tuition.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's trying to back off because
these insane policies that are very unpopular with the American people.
That's right. And they're unpopular with Californians, even though California
really?
Is deep blue,
they are unpopular.
They're unpopular. The Proposition 46, where you can steal 47, where you can steal anything you want under $1,000. They're unpopular with California.
He says that's not true.
It
you know
is
that,
true.
Right?
It's absolutely true. The transgender policies in schools, you've got 60 to 70% of Californians that are saying, wait a minute, you can't keep secrets from parents. And yet they do. And yet they do. And the attorney general's like, oh, yeah. And so they phrase it as, the safety in neighborhoods. Prop 47 was the Safety in Neighborhoods and Schools Act, right? Oh, let's everybody vote for that. Yeah, it lets you steal whatever you want to, lets you do any kind of drugs you want to. And then you've got other laws that literally legalize prostitution. California just changes the name, and then people aren't paying attention. Like, safe neighborhoods, well, vote for that.
So, Trace, the other thing we hear about the big push to clean up the homelessness in various cities. Why now is this happening? Did everyone reach their boiling point?
Well,
or is this politically oriented?
Because people are starting to move out. I mean, the big dollar money is starting to move out.
The encampments.
The Elon Musk. Yeah, the encampments are terrible. I mean, even where we are in the Los Angeles Bureau, Brian, there are, you know, motorhomes surrounding that area of homeless people who have been there for years. And this is just outside of Santa Monica, one of the wealthiest suburbs in the country, which is now a disaster. We did a preview of this or an exact, you know, look at what's happening behind the scenes in Santa Monica. And you think, how is this possible in 20 years that Santa Monica goes from this thriving beach city, one of the most famous in the country, to this disaster homeless area that has no budget, has no police force, and is in dire straits. Third Street Promenade is still open in parts, but the main mall is closing down. They're getting rid of the thing. Nordstrom is like, listen, take it. We're going. We're leaving. We don't care. We'll pay the rent. We'll do whatever we have to, but we can't make
shoplifting.
It's shoplifting.
Because people don't come by.
It's shoplifting. Nobody goes down there. I mean,
there's too much homeless.
Yeah, there's just no business. I mean, yeah, some businesses opening at 3 o'clock and closing at 6 o'clock because you get in and get out. But at nighttime, they're like, no, why would we go? There's no money to be made, and there's only danger to face.
When I lived out there, that's the first place I take people when they come to visit. I go, okay, let's go to Third Street Promenade.
Right.
We had a ton of stuff. Musicians playing on the outside, jugglers and comedians on boxes. And I went by there right after the pandemic, and I thought, well, it's going to take a while to stand it up again. But people are telling me that's done.
It's
crazy.
Listen, they're trying to survive. We walked with a man named John Alley, who used to be the mayor, and now he's an activist in Santa Monica. And you walk around, and you talk to the business owners, and they're like, what are we going to do? I mean, we're trying. This is our livelihood. We're trying, but there's no help. They don't have enough law enforcement help. And it's two blocks from the beach. I mean, you go up
to these malls. You can't get LAPD Kent staff?
No, it's Santa Monica's a city. I mean, that's
Their own city.
Their own city. So
which usually is more desirable, too. Because
that's exactly right. I mean, Santa Monica, the police chief just came out and said, listen, we need 300 police officers. They've got 200, 205, and they can't get people to sign up. They can't give these jobs away because nobody wants to be a cop in Santa Monica.
If you want to be a cop, there's nothing better than being California, you would think.
You would think. But, but California doesn't like cops. Remember Kamala Harris? She says, oh, I'm law enforcement. No, she's not. No, she's not. She's anti-police. She's defund the police. She was against, you know, ICE, and she's against a lot of the things. Now she's changing her tune. She's a law and order thing. No, she's not.
Right. When we come back a little bit more on that, and when Mark Halperin discovered about what Democrats really think their chances are, Trace Gallagher in a rare appearance in New York, and he's ready to go. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In the middle of all this, the White House sends a FEMA representative on a national talk show on Sunday to say, stop with the hard questions. It's hurting the morale of the FEMA employees. You can't, even Jussie Smollett can't make this stuff up. I mean, most Americans who saw that interview, Sean, thought, you know, cry me a river. That's what we pay you for. Get your ass back to work and do your job.
Right. They wanted just to talk about misinformation. And by the way, we also know, you know, Trace Gallagher here. Trace, what do you think? Senator Kennedy, best guest ever.
Right? Yeah, he is. I mean, he always comes up with one great line, right?
Right.
So you can talk to him and he, you know, you think, okay, he's going to come up with one great line. And because of that, that one great line is replayed 10 times throughout the day. So everybody thinks that they just, you know, every time you see him, everybody tunes in because they're thinking, okay, what's the line going to be?
But we had a soundbite too that from 2022, from that same FEMA director, talking about her idea of a perfect staff would be an equitable staff and give people a diverse staff.
Right.
Again, do you want, as FEMA director, you want your best people. You don't need a lesbian, Pakistani, transgender person to check a box.
Right.
Unless that's the best person.
Listen, you know, let me just simplify this. Remember that FEMA, if you go on their website is ready.gov. Right. And yet when you look at their mantra, when you look at their goals, number one is equity. Number two is climate change. And number three is readiness. And I think, don't you think readiness
right.
should be at the top of the heap?
See, it's not Republican or Democrat. You're running against common sense
right.
and this enlightenment. Which
right.
one do you want to be enlightened or do you want to live on this planet?
Which is why the Fox News at Night Common Sense Department, Brian, is worth watching
How
every day.
How big is this department?
It is immense.
How many people do you employ?
It has gotten big. Oh, I can't even divulge the information.
Benefits.
Oh, they're full benefits in their eye. And not one of them has called in sick ever. I mean, they've been here for a while. Not one
well,
of them has called in sick. And I mean, you talk about the brain trust. It is phenomenal,
right.
the stuff they put
and that's
together.
What Trump does. It used to drive conservatives crazy because he would go, no, it doesn't make any sense. We're not doing that. And now that people realize, okay,
right.
we're following him 4 more years. I don't know what happens next,
yeah.
but we've never seen anything like it.
No.
So you're going to be the one man.
I'm the one man on Outnumbered.
On Outnumbered.
Coming up in about 30
minutes. Are you
doing
a show in New York tonight?
We're doing the show. We did it last night. We did hurricane coverage for 2 hours up until the wee hours of the morning. Thank you so much for watching, Brian. It was great. When you texted
I have to sleep
in all
sometimes. Can I sleep in 2 hours?
I hear you. That's when I was getting them this morning. You're like, are you kidding me?
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know any Trump person who says they're worried about losing any of the seven. They don't know that they don't necessarily think they're the favorite in Michigan and Wisconsin, but they're not worried about losing them.
Right.
There's not, you don't hear from them, oh my goodness. What you hear is we're moving up. What the three of us are hearing, we're moving up in those two. We're going to win the three Sunbelt states, and we're stronger in Pennsylvania than she is. That to me, if the whole thing's about the Electoral College, you take any of the Rust Belt states away from her, it's very difficult for her to win. Very difficult. It's not mathematically impossible, but it probably won't happen if she loses any of them.
And the President of the United States says, "I want New York, New Jersey, and New Mexico." So that's And he says in Virginia, I talked to Governor Youngkin today, he's trailing about four in Virginia. I'm not sure what kind of commitment he's going to make because you have to make some decisions. But that was Mark Halpern. He's an opinion guy. He's an analyst. He says, I'm not telling you Trump. I want Trump to win. I'm just telling you what Democratic pollsters, internals are saying to them. And they're alarmed. And it makes sense. Why else would she suddenly be available on The View, Howard Stern, 60 Minutes? Why is she all of a sudden no longer risk adverse or it's worth the risk? Something happened. Bob Cusack, you've seen it all, editor-in-chief of The Hill. So Mark Halpern says that, and people accuse him of going to bat for Trump. He's like, no, I'm just telling you what the polls are saying. What are you hearing?
Yeah, no, my colleague Amy Parnes did a great story this week about Democratic angst being on the rise, and you're totally right. That's the reason she's doing the media interviews, and she hasn't hit a home run in any of these interviews, even though they're friendly. Obviously, the Howard Stern one was very friendly. But both on The View and Colbert, she was basically asked to say how she's different than President Biden, who, as you know, Brian, is not very popular. His policies aren't popular. And she didn't answer it. She said, oh, nothing comes to mind. Like, that's an easy question. That doesn't mean you have to bash Biden. I understand that. But Biden would also understand you've got to separate yourself from him. And of course, what happened? The Trump campaign was all over that. And so the media blitz is not working. Mm-hmm. Her honeymoon is over. That's for sure.
Here's what Trump said yesterday to that. Cut 28.
So all of the agony, all of the suffering, all of the inflation and the border and the criminals coming into our country, she wouldn't have done anything different than this guy that should have really never been president, in my opinion, should have never been president. So she said that there'd be nothing. And to me, that is a disqualifying answer. That should disqualify her from even running.
So that's in response. And it is controversial. But see, the thing is, Bob, that's preparation. I know she has good people around her. I mean, does anybody think David Plouffe doesn't know what he's doing? Brian Fallon doesn't know what he's doing? Does anyone? This guy, Ian Sams, sits there, takes in, you know, he's been a spokesperson for the worst times with Joe Biden. I mean, just sit around and go, guys, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to go do 60 Minutes now. They're going to ask me why I flip-flopped on five major stories. What do I want to do? I evolved. Well, why? How did you evolve? What made you evolve? Did you change your opinion? Did you meet a bunch of frackers in hard hats and realize that environmentally it isn't that dangerous? But she never has any answer to any of that.
No. And this is, her rise in the polls has been significant, but it is now stalling. And I think a lot of that rise was kind of soft, where independent voters are like, okay, maybe I'm leaning toward her. But, you know, it is kind of baffling. I mean, it goes back to the Lester Holt interview early in the Biden administration where she wasn't ready for the border question. How can you not be ready for the border question? How can you not be ready for a question, really a softball question in a lot of ways, but also a straightforward and a good question of how are you different than Biden? How would you do anything differently? I mean, you can mention, well, the Afghanistan withdrawal didn't go so well. Biden's been very defensive on that, but at least pick out some wonky details. There are differences on tax policy that they have. But that answer was not a good one. And not surprisingly, the Trump campaign, which also has some very good people, you know, they pounced all over it.
Right. So a couple other things. Just I want you to hear a little bit more from Halpern. What he says, he was able to get a leak, and evidently the Harris camp is really upset because it's accurate. But this is what they're seeing inside. Cut 31.
What's happening now with Kamala Harris is this is an experiment. Can you win a short campaign with an untested candidate? And what I'm telling you is happening in private polling is she's got a problem now. Okay? It's not cheering for Trump. It's not predicting Trump will win. She's got a problem. For you Harris people on here complaining that we're talking about problems in the Harris campaign, you're welcome to put your head in the sand about it. If you want to go watch MSNBC primetime and hear how great things are going for the Harris campaign, you're welcome to do that. But if you want to understand what's actually happening, we're here to tell you. I just saw some new private polling today that's very robust private polling. She's in a lot of trouble.
Right. So, Bob, what other reason can you give for her doing all these sit-downs? So I just think that if you just watch the action, it tells you a lot.
No, that's right. Since the debate, I think with Trump, she's had some shaky performances and shaky media appearances, partly because she hasn't done a lot of media, nor did Biden for that matter, during their time in the White House. So, you know, that matters. And it's also, you know, going back to the VP debate, why did Vance win that debate? Well, part of the reason was because he goes into the lion's den. He goes on stations and does mainstream media, and he'll debate them. And Walz hasn't been doing that. And that's part of the reason that Vance won, other than Vance is very well-spoken. But you need to have practice of sparring with journalists. And obviously Trump and Vance do it a lot, and it helps them.
So, you know, we're looking for an October surprise. Is Bob Woodward's book, from which you've seen, an October surprise? And if they write a tell-all book about the Biden administration and don't talk about his cognitive decline, or at least address it, that book is worthless. If you don't talk about how the vice president has been invisible, and many Democrats thought she should have been dumped from the ticket prior to her being headed to ticket, that book is useless. It looks like an agenda book. I have not seen anything about that and in the excerpts they've released. Have you?
I have not on that, not on that point, and certainly that is a legitimate issue, and it's part of the reason, a big part of the reason why Biden was pushed out by Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. And to your point on Harris, you know, a lot of Democrats were thinking, well, we can get somebody else, we can get Newsom or somebody else, and that was never going to work. I was telling Democrats, listen, from the fundraising perspective, you got Harris or Biden, you got to choose one of them. And obviously they had to go with Harris, but no, that is a big concern. You know, Biden is nowhere near as sharp as he was even 4 years ago. And I think we're going to see a lot more stories probably after the election, Brian, on that issue with Biden's acuity and memory lapses.
So we have Donald Trump says that he wants to go. He's going to Madison Square Garden October 27th. You know he's going to sell it out. Other people are saying they should not rent it to him because he's like Hitler. You know, there was evidently a Nazi rally right before World War II, a pro-Nazi rally at Madison Square Garden, and they're equating it to it. Of course, at this point, I just think that rhetoric works against your cause personally. But he's doing that. He wants New Jersey and he wants New Mexico. If you're his campaign, do you say, Mr. President, we got 7 battleground states, focus there, or do you like this?
I think doing a one-off at MSG, I think that's a good idea because that is, I mean, it's an iconic place. I've been there, grew up in Manhattan, watched many Knicks games there. But I don't think he should be spending time in those blue states. He's got to camp out in Pennsylvania. You know, our decision desk, HQ, who is a partner with us, they say basically if the candidate who wins Pennsylvania has an 85% chance of winning. And if you look at the map, that's dead on. So you got to camp out in states like that, I would think, down the stretch. And listen, and Trump, he outworked Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt about it in 2016. So it's going to be tough to outwork Trump this time around, but certainly Harris is doing at least more rallies than Hillary Clinton was doing.
She does, but I remember a story over last weekend that some Democrats were concerned about her light schedule. It's got way too many meetings and not enough appearances. So I hear you on that. A couple of things. I just saw today in the Cook Report there could be trouble. It says that Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania is on the verge of losing a seat. It was supposedly a big pickup possibly for Democrats. Amy Walter wrote about it. It says Perry, a former Freedom Caucus guy, is being killed fundraising by Janelle Stelson, a well-known former local news anchor. Is that a canary in a coal mine? Could that be problems, or is that just a well-known anchor in a purple district?
I think, I mean, Democrats have been targeting Perry for a long time. They would love to take him out like they would love to take out Ted Cruz, though I don't think they're going to win on Cruz. But there are a lot of close races in the House. That is one of them. So that is one that and Democrats do have big fundraising advantages in the battle for the House, which, by the way, goes through California and New York. A lot of these close races are coming down to those states. Now, obviously, those are blue states, but at the same time, those are districts that are right down the middle. So that's going to be – but Perry is one they would love to take out, Perry. Mm. Honestly, Brian, I don't think – we may not know who's winning the House for about a week. A lot of these House races are so close and they take a while to figure out.
You know, we're talking about Cusack to the Hill. So, Bob, let's look at the Senate if we can. They say that right now they're seeing huge movement with Mike Rogers in Michigan and Eric Hovde in Wisconsin. – You know, Hogan's trailing by a couple of points in Maryland, which is going to be a tough haul, but he might be the unicorn candidate that could do it. We'll see. And then you look at Tim Sheehy. What are you seeing?
Well, listen, I think the chances of Republicans taking the Senate are very high. I would put it at higher than some others. I think it's around 80% because I don't think Democrats are going to take out Cruz or Rick Scott in Florida. They've already lost West Virginia because Manchin is not running. So then basically Democrats have to win every other race, including those races and beyond that you mentioned. Listen, John Tester's in a lot of trouble in Montana. I think it is.
And he should be. He votes like a he votes like a liberal Democrat. He could be by Joe Manchin's side through all that. And Sinema, he could have been one of the three standing up to not blow up the filibuster and not pack the court. But he chose not to.
Yeah, he was not part of that duo. Certainly, they didn't make it a trio with him. Sherrod Brown is doing better in Ohio, but that's a red state. And you know, history shows that in close Senate races, especially, who wins? Well, it's whoever wins the presidential. So obviously Trump's going to win Ohio. That's bad news for Sherrod Brown. And an interesting Wall Street Journal piece recently, Sherrod Brown was asked about why the rise of Trump in Ohio specifically, and Sherrod Brown said, "I don't know." So
that's what he said.
He's trying to hang on. He couldn't even he can't even explain the rise of Trump in his own, in a home state. But he Brown is a very good candidate. He could still win, but that's going to be a tough haul for him too.
And lastly, just on the Q poll that's out, I thought it was relatively unique. Michigan has Trump up by 2, and Wisconsin Trump up by 2, but losing by 2 in Pennsylvania. That was the first time in a long time I've seen that. Have you seen that trend too? I know in the real clear, it's a flat-footed tie.
Yeah, that is, and there'd be some outliers here and there. But on those battleground states, you know, there's 7, obviously. They usually don't go, and for the sake of the country, hopefully they don't go 4-3. They usually go one way or the other. There's 6 of 7 or at least 5 of 7 go one way or the other. We saw that in 2016 and 2020. I anticipate that's going to be the case as well. So most of these battlegrounds are going to go to one candidate as opposed to splitting them down the middle. And we'll see. So that means whoever wins October, because this thing is so tight, is going to win those battlegrounds.
Interesting. Bob, and which story did you intrigued? What are you working on right now?
Listen, I think the next steps of what Harris does, I think she's got to, honestly, going back to what we were talking about, I think she's got to clean up that statement about not being different than Biden, just saying, well, I'm definitely not Joe Biden, like appearance wise. Well, okay. But I think she's got to, they got to walk that back. And I think that was a major unforced error.
You know why?
For
her. Why? Turn the page. She wants everyone to turn the page to what? To the same thing. You're in power now. You just reminded everybody.
Right. You want to be the change candidate. And she's actually surprisingly doing well in some change, you know, who's got the change moniker. But at the same time, when answers like that, she's going to lose it quick.
Bob Cusack, always great. Thank you so much. He's editor-in-chief of The Hill.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, Brian Kilmeade, back to wrap things up and find out if you indeed need to know more.
It's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hey, welcome back. It's time to find out if you need to know more, although you need to know a lot. Next. Taylor Swift, Tom Brady donated to support relief efforts in Florida following a devastating hurricane. Obviously, we're in the middle of now. She donated $5 million to Taylor Swift. Can you imagine that? And also, Tom Brady donated $100,000 to the volunteer effort. Next, Rafael Nadal. I'm not the biggest tennis guy, but I can appreciate greatness. And he was. He's retiring at the age of 38, saying, "I don't think I've been able to play without limitations. But in life, everything has a beginning and an end, and I think it's an appropriate time to put an end to a great career." I saw a big feature on him in 60 Minutes. An extremely likable guy. I think he's going to be, he's like a rock star in Spain. Next, Pete Rose was taken to the hospital by a friend just 5 days before his death. But after a battery of tests, doctors concluded he was healthy enough to go home. On September 25th, cause she believed was acting different. Docs ran tests, but everything appeared to be fine with him. Days later, Pete traveled to Nashville for a meet and greet with fans, where he passed away hours after returning from the trip. As for what happened the day of Rose's death, his son Tyler made a 911 call at 2:54, telling authorities he believed his dad was dead. Cops and medics responded to the scene, and when they arrived, Tyler told them they found his dad unresponsive. He got his father dressed and then performed CPR. He got his father dressed and then performed CPR, unfortunately, to no avail. Emergency responders, after consulting with a physician at a local hospital, declared Rose dead. The coroner in Vegas, after performing the autopsy, concluded he died of heart disease. How could they not pick that up? What are you going to the doctor for? They don't check your heart. Next, Brown University rejects the pro-Palestinian students' demands to divest from Israel. Thank goodness. Brown will not divest from 10 companies described in student-led divestment proposal to facilitate the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Stand up to these idiots who are being financed by outside sources in America and beyond. Enough. Next. A second fan has filed a lawsuit claiming ownership of Shohei Ohtani's 50-50 baseball. It's going to be a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars. According to online records, the latest suit was filed by this guy, Joe Davido of Florida, and the defendants are Chris Belansky and Kelvin Ramirez, Max Mattis, and Golden Auctions. Belansky is the man who left the stadium with the baseball. Mattis, who filed the first lawsuit, and Ramirez have also claimed ownership of the baseball. Tiny became the first player in baseball history to hit 50 homers and steal 50 bases. The bidding for the baseball through Golden Auctions is $1.4 million. The suit goes on to say that an unknown fan wrongfully jumped over the railing, jumped onto the plaintiff and plaintiff's arm, and attacked him, causing the 50-50 ball to come loose. Did you see this, Pete?
No, I didn't notice that, but the way he's claiming is that he had his hand on half the baseball. So he's claiming, well, if I had my hand on half the baseball, it's half mine, until some fan jumped down, I guess, in the scrum for the ball and knocked his hand off of it. Thus, he didn't walk away with the baseball.
Ugh. What a mess.
Yeah.
Next, a pair of British brothers-in-law worked in tandem to break their own Guinness Book of World Records by pulling a pair of cars a distance of 32 miles in 24 hours. John Dorwin and James Baker originally became co-holders of the record when they pulled their car the distance of 22 miles, and that's in 2021. And both attempts of men made sure to stop the exact same distance so they could co-hold the record. So I feel like that is the American way. You can be nice and can be competitive. And lastly, the Mets are in the middle of one of the most remarkable cities seasons ever. They eliminate the Philadelphia Phillies, the number two seed, last night with a grand slam by Lindor, the team's MVP, who took a few years to get settled in. They traded so many players for him and a bunch of draft picks. He's finally coming to his own, and now they wait to play the Dodgers or the Padres.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.